Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. Thank you for all your support. Head over to YouTube to the Aaron Bender Podcast channel for exclusive video content with my guests and like the Aaron Bender Podcast page on Facebook. Before we get to my conversation with Julie Chang, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job and then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. Julie Chang is a TV journalist, most recently with Fox 11 here in Los Angeles, but she also spent a lot of time working in New York. She's a wife, a mother of two adorable little ones, an activist, an actress, and a brain tumor survivor. She's also the founder of 940 Life. She's going to explain that here in this quick conversation that we had to kind of squeeze into an afternoon a few weeks ago. She just posted the trailer for 940 Life on her YouTube channel, 940 with Julie Chang. I've put a link to that in the show notes. We started by talking about the crimes targeting the Asian American and Pacific Islander community.
I really don't think it's gotten worse. I think things are just being revealed now. And we now have smartphones where we can record things. And so I hate to say it, but all of these awful things have been happening all along. Maybe there's a little bit of a peak since the negative rhetoric that came from leadership before President Biden came into office. And just, you know, I'm a firm believer of what Brené Brown says. You know, she's a world-renowned researcher on shame and vulnerability. And she talks about how, you know, it all starts with language and that words matter. And so we're seeing the repercussion of the harsh words that were used against Asian Americans playing out and the inhumanity of it all. Yeah, so for me, I knew it was gonna be this bad only because I would say I live in a pretty metropolis area. I live in Los Angeles. I live in a very diverse neighborhood. Right. And a month and a half into COVID, a neighbor that I rarely talk to saw me outside. He kind of runs outside a little bit excited, and my spidey senses immediately go off because I'm thinking, like, this guy, I've lived next to him for years. He's never tried to say hi or anything. And I'm out there with my kids, and he said, you know, I have something I want to give you. Are you going to be out here for a few minutes? And I said, yeah. And again, very suspicious because I'm thinking, like, what is he going to give me?
Yeah.
He comes out with a giant box of fortune cookies, custom made fortune cookies. And in each one is a message that says, eat less bats. Mm. And before I could even react, he's like, you know, running back inside his home. And so my thought process is, if this guy who lives in a diverse neighborhood, within just a month of time, took the money and energy to turn these fortune cookies around, it, you know, and the cookies clearly meant to hurt,
right,
feelings, because it was too soon for it to even be humorous. Like, it's a year and plus now, it still wouldn't be funny. And so to me, it gave me an early gauge of, holy cow, we better brace for what's coming, because we're going to be scapegoat for what's happening to,
right,
to the world. And so, it's not pretty. And it really just cuts me at the core, because it is the most vulnerable group of people. And we're talking like the elderly. And, you know, if you've met any elderly Asian American folks who immigrated here, like their whole goal in life is to not get in anyone's way.
Right. Yes.
To not be an inconvenience. Like, classic example is like, my name is not Julie. My Korean name is Juyong. My parents asked me to change my name when we immigrated when I was 9 years old because they didn't want my difficult name to be an inconvenience to the teachers, to the school system, to the other students. So, you know, you're constantly conscientious of, you know, how others see you and how you don't want to get in their way. And so to think that these people who are already so trying to take up the smallest amount of space are being shit kicked, it's just like, it just breaks my heart.
How do you talk with your kids about what's happening?
The younger one is 2. So you really have to use such basic words, but my son is 6. And I actually am going to post something on my Instagram today because we had a really, really powerful moment where I told him that their racism and the concept of being treated unfairly, these are all very complicated things that's very hard for kids to understand.
Yeah.
And so he and I came up with a plan to explain it in a way that is easier for kids to digest. Now, he's 6, and he's been to a handful of protests and rallies, one for the Women's March, one for Black Lives Matter, and I recently took him to the LA one for Stop Asian Hate. And I mean, like, he is my greatest teacher. Let me tell you how he explained Black Lives Matter, how it clicked in his head. We decided to attend a Black Lives Matter protest in Idaho, of all places.
Always up for an adventure.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing is, I just couldn't ever even have thought of explaining it as beautifully as he did. So on that trip, he really got into playing Uno, the card game. And the point of the card game is to get rid of your cards as fast as possible. And the easiest way to do that is if you have these specialty cards that put your opponent at a disadvantage. So you have the cards where, you know, the opponent takes +2 cards or +4 cards and whatnot. And on the way to Black Lives Matter protest, he says to me, he said, oh, I'm telling you, the car ride to and from these rallies are the most pivotal, powerful moments, because it's like you can see the light bulbs going off. And he said, you're saying white people had all the specialty cards from the very beginning.
Wow.
But there's no way anybody else could have ever really won, because this game is unfair. And to me, I literally was like verklempt, because I was thinking, holy cow. And at that time he was 5. So I'm thinking, he's a 5-year-old who totally just got it. Like,
he gets
you
it.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gets it. And then with Stop Asian Hate, he understood it in the context of Legos. He said, you know, it's funny, because when we get Legos, I asked him, I said, what do we do to the box? He said, we throw the box out. I said, why? He said, because the good stuff is in the inside. And I said, That's what's happening with racism. We're fighting over boxes.
Right.
And it totally struck a chord with him. And so, you know, and he said to me, he goes, you know, if you put your heart on the table and daddy puts his heart on the table, my husband's white, he's like, I wouldn't be able to tell whose heart is whose. So he's, you know, he got the concept. Inside the box, we're all the same. And we're now fighting over things that literally doesn't matter, you know? And it's just so powerful. And then of course the same theories apply for the Women's March. Just, you know, it was never set up fairly for women to be eye to eye with everybody else. And so I think he kind of guides me to how he can understand it. And then it clicks even more powerfully for me. So, yeah. And, you know, I have a lot of friends who say, you know, I just don't even want to have that conversation with them yet, because like the innocence of childhood is so short-lived anyway. that why taint it earlier than you have to? And to me, I'm like, that's the ultimate privilege that you even have that choice.
Right.
You know, and I'll never forget. And Driggs came home from preschool. He was 3 and a half. And he said, Mom, there's a kid. And he went like this to my face. Every time he sees me, he pulls his eyes. And he says, why do your eyes look like that? And so turns out this kid is from a different country with very little exposure to Asian people.
Yeah.
And so I took it as, okay, they're 3 and a half. He's really probably coming more from a place of curiosity than hate. So I didn't get mad at the other kid, but it presented a situation where I had to talk about racism and race with a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
And, you know, and mine is so benign compared to all the African-American parents who have to have a much more serious of a talk. And so I don't know. I feel very torn because I don't want to be in a position to tell people how to parent or what they should do. And it is it's a shame riddled space. And it always makes me kind of sad because it's really hard being a parent. So how divisive that space is has always kind of eaten me up. And that's why, like, I'm creating 940.
I was going to ask. Yeah, that has to do with 940. It's right there on your laptop. What is 940 and what drove you to create that?
Wacky series I'm creating. Hopefully the first episode will be ready within 2-3 weeks. So 940 is the amount of weekends I counted from the time they're born until they're 18. So until they go to college, if they choose to go to college. So, but if you really think about it, like, it's far fewer than 940 weekends, because your kids, as you know, they stop wanting to hang out with you the minute they're old enough to be a little bit independent.
Yeah.
And if you're a divorced parent, that's half, right? Immediately right there, 940 is cut in half. And so, as I talked about, the parenting space is divisive. But one thing that I found that most parents all agree on is just how fast it all goes by. Every parent with a college age kid says, oh my God, it's like a blur. It all went by so fast. And so I started thinking, well, why does it have to be a blur? Like, are there actual ways to give time shape? Because I don't want to wake up tomorrow and just like wonder what the heck happened. Right. Where did it all go? You know what I mean? And so upon my research, luckily I found out there are so many valuable, simple tools that you can apply to your everyday life, no matter where you are on the income status, no matter where you are on, you know, your kids are 18 or your kids are 15. Like, there are so many applicable, easy, accessible ways to sort of slow down time. And so that's 940 in a nutshell.
You brought up the idea that, you know, you blink and it's all past. You don't really remember it, especially those early days when we're all sleep deprived. And you've been very open lately on your Instagram, especially about how sleep deprived you were through your career. All those, you know, the junkets, the red carpets, all the different celebrity interviews in New York and at Fox 11. You know, you're going through these pictures. You're like, I don't remember this interview. I don't remember how much sleep I did or didn't get before that.
I don't remember 95% of the stars are interviewed. Like, literally, if I didn't have a picture, I would never believe you that I talked to them, because I have no memory of it. You know, I think it's very well known. We live in a culture where we glamorize the grind, and it's almost like a brag when you're like, oh, I'm so busy. Like, you really have to make that mind shift, because it's like, I could interview Brad Pitt 100 times. But it's not cool if I don't remember it happening.
Right.
It didn't happen. And so, you know, for 17 years, I more or less did morning TV with the wake up time of between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. And, you know, I've covered 8 Oscars. I honestly can't tell you what happened at any of them, because all I just remember from every single moment is that I was just so tired. I was just so sleep deprived. And I don't know, maybe I'm crazy for thinking this, but I find it just oddly too coincidental that when they discovered that I had a fist-sized brain tumor, at that time, based on the growth rate of the tumor, they estimated that it had been in my head for 12 years. And at that very exact moment, I'd been doing morning TV for 12 years. And so I am a firm believer that if you don't get sleep, lack of sleep, the stress of it manifests in really, really dangerous ways. And so for me, it was a tumor. Like, you cannot deprive yourself of proper rest and think that you're going to be fine, you know?
Right.
And, you know, it's true with the slogan, like, what is the health slogan? It's like, if you don't make time for your wellness, you're going to have to make time for your illness. And it's because I literally I started doing morning shows at age 24. And, you know, I'm in Manhattan, I'm 24, I'm in this bustling, lively city. And so I'm thinking, if I strategize, I can cheat sleep, like I don't need it. And so I would get home around 1 or 2 p.m. I'd sleep from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., go out to dinner. I mean, like literally I was sleeping three hour increments, which, you know, if you're thinking about a REM sleep, I didn't REM sleep for 10 years.
No, can't do it. Yeah. Can't do it.
I would get up sometimes at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., go out to dinner, and then be in work by 1 a.m.
The look on your face right now, like even just saying that, how ridiculous it sounds.
I'm just tired thinking it. Like, what was the point? I was sleepwalking, you know? And so anyway, learn from my mistakes, get your sleep. And I know as the world sort of puts its heads up from this pandemic nightmare, that we're gonna be really tempted to go back to that pace where we're not taking care of ourselves and we're not savoring in each moment. And I just really hope we're able to kind of remember this time and remember, you know, just slowing it down. And the only way you can truly gain back time in your life is to be present.
The idea of rest, and I know your time is short because you have to go rest. No, I know your time is short, but the idea of rest and how it affects decision-making, you know, impulse decisions. Here, let me set this up here. Had you not been sleep deprived, you might have not gone out on a limb and DM'd your now husband.
Probably.
So there's a reason. I want to know what was in that DM.
It's so funny because let me tell you, he is the most private human being. It's probably a nightmare being married to someone like me. I'm such an oversharer. So I had a crush on him. You know, our whole town had a crush on him. It's like so annoying.
This is in Michigan?
Yeah, this is in it. This is in New York. So we both lived in New York.
Oh, okay.
Almost 10 years, but we didn't reconnect till 6 months before I moved out here.
Okay.
And so, I just perused through his Facebook account and it was like on super lockdown mode. Like the most recent picture was 8 years. And I was like, okay, so he's clearly gay and he's keeping that. Or he's married, or he's gay and married. Like, whatever the case, I'm like, this is like such a far stretch. And so I actually got offered to write a book, never finished, obviously. Richard Pine is the literary agent's name. And he somehow heard about my story. This is a story for another day, but I've been on my own since I was 15.
Yeah.
This was right around the time where that book Tiger Mom was such a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, you kind of turn that book on its head because you're a tiger kid, but you didn't grow up with parents. And so can you write about that? And so you know, like any trauma victim, like you bury that stuff deep. Like you don't, you try not to remember. And so I didn't remember a lot. And he said, do me a favor, reconnect with anyone from your hometown that you can. You will be so surprised, like the memory it jogs. Mm. And so I did a quick search and there were three people from Ann Arbor that I found in living in New York. And Leif was the third person I met for lunch that week. And it was just instant. Anyway, that DM I sent was super cryptic. I said, hey, I'm working on a project. Don't even know if you're checking these messages, but I can explain more to you in person if you're available. You know, I hope you're well. Cut to, this is the funny part. We meet in Soho for lunch like noon. And he's like, he thinks that I'm going through a 12-step AA program. And the first thing I order is a glass of rosé. So people are like, oh, she's really needing some help here. Things are cut off. Like, you know, because you know the 12-step program, like one of the things is like make amends or
right,
you
yeah,
know.
Step nine, right.
We weren't that close of friends where I needed to make amends with him for anything, but he just thought the message was so out of the blue and cryptic that he was like, okay, she's obviously going through a sobering program. And it's not going well because she just ordered a giant cup of rosé.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, so he answered the DM. And then from that lunch date, we saw each other every day until I basically moved out here.
I know you got to go. It's life. We have kids. And we squeeze in podcasting and other projects when we can.
Yeah, we used to have childcare help up until November. But since November, we've been flying solo. And 2 and a 6-year-old, it's real intense. But you know what? Like, I honestly feel like this is like happening to me on purpose because I'm like, you're creating 940 and you need to create in a way where it's going to be the most relatable, you know?
Yeah.
And like, the situation I'm in is ubiquitous right now. And I have it so far better than most people, right? Like I have a really, really hands-on partner. And on that note, I do want to send you my warmest, warmest light because I know you've had a huge loss.
Yeah.
And I cannot even imagine the emptiness that you've been feeling. So I've been thinking about you and I've been thinking about your two girls. And I want to tell you something. I normally get asked to do podcasts and I never accept. Not because like, I think like, whatever, like the podcast isn't worthy of my time or anything like that. It's just simply childcare and just the coordination that involves. But I felt a nudge from your wife.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I felt a nudge from your wife. And I said, you know what? I know nothing about this gentleman, but I just clicked on it and I just heard your little intro. And I'm like, this is why. I was meant to have this conversation with you.
Well, if anybody wants to get more of your story, I'd love to spend 2 hours because that would only really be the tip of the iceberg of your story. Mm-hmm. But if anybody wants more of your story, where should they go?
I guess Instagram is usually where I share the most. It's at Truly Julie Chang. And then I also have an Instagram handle for my upcoming docuseries, 940. It's at 940 Life. And I'm not exactly sure I'm going to roll it out first. I think the longer episodes will probably be on YouTube.
Yeah.
And maybe I will bite size it for IGTV. And I have been in really, really great conversations with larger distributors. But I'm really stubborn where I'm now at a point where like I'm not creating this show for monetary sakes. I'm climbing the second mountain where, cause like I've climbed the first mountain and I thought that was going to be enough. And then I get to the top of that mountain and I was thinking, huh, this isn't really feeding my soul as I thought it would. And so, here I am climbing my second mountain. And when you're doing something that is really just, you feel like this is like your purpose in life and it's not like profits driven.
Right.
You're less likely or willing to compromise the idea, right? And so I'm not even joking. I've been told everything from like, this show is amazing, but you know who you need is like Jessica Simpson or like, you know, like I don't want to shame people, like the suggestions that have come my way. And I just, if I just truly see the clear vision of what it is, and I want to keep it honest, I'm not sure I'm willing to work with a larger distributor. So we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, it's been a beautiful journey so far. A lot of the shots my kids walk through, because I don't have.
I love that. I'm surprised. I'm honestly surprised you've been able to keep them out of this podcast.
Yeah. And I think that is the most relatable thing about anything that's happening right now. We're all just trying to work from home and do it all. You know what I mean? And so, I feel really, really, really fortunate to be in this space where I can kind of create something that's been really near and dear to my heart for a long time. And I just am a firm believer, after coming pretty close to a death call with a brain tumor, I do really believe the best gift you can give someone is time. And if you can show people how to do that, you know what I mean? And if it's just like one parent out there that decides like, okay, like 5 minutes of attunement means more than 3 hours of like being absent-minded with my child, right, then I know that my mission's been complete. And so.
Well, the time you've given me today has been a gift, and I truly, truly appreciate it.
Oh my God. And please keep these wonderful conversations going. I listened to a few of the podcasts, and I just think it's like so, so fluid. And you're right. Like, everybody has a freaking story.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And I appreciate you sharing a part of yours, and we will drive people to your Instagram and 940 Life as well. And down the road, when we each get a little bit more time, let's spend a little bit more time. But yes. Thank you, Julie. Thank you.
Aaron, thank you so much. Bye. Stay healthy, everybody.
I've put Julie's links in the show notes. Most importantly, head to her YouTube channel, 940 with Julie Chang, for the preview of 940 Life. Subscribe while you're there. And while you're there, go to the Aaron Bender Podcast channel and like the Aaron Bender Podcast page on Facebook. All my links are at aaronbender.com. If you have guest ideas or comments, email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thanks for listening.